fresh brewed coffee on a cold winter's day. I guess it's not actually winter. It's cold though. It got down to like 25 degrees here in Abita Springs last night, which means if it's that cold down here, most of the rest of y'all listening to this are really freezing your butts off. But, and if I sound a little weird, a little weirder than normal, I just got over the flu. I was in bed for about 6 days and finally got to get in a day of leaving the house yesterday and actually doing some stuff. So I'm glad to be on the road to recovery. But today on the Extra Crispy, I know this is the first episode I've done in a while. I haven't done many episodes in the last few months. I think I just did one back in August. And so I'm ready to get back at it, though. It's been a crazy busy few months, and I won't go into all that on this podcast today, but I'm excited to get back into podcasting, and I've got some really great guests lined up in the next few weeks. But today, you just get to hear from me. I'm going to have a conversation with myself. But today is also a monumental day in the history of Extra Crispy, because today is our 50th episode. 50th episode, people. We've been doing this, who am I kidding? It's just me. It always sounds more official if I say we. I'm all alone here. I'm doing this whole thing by myself. I gotta come up with the content, record it, produce it. It's a lot of stuff to carry, folks. Who would have thought that I would reach this milestone? Here I am, episode 50. And today, I want to celebrate 50 episodes of Extra Crispy by talking about a bunch of stuff which is way over my head. But that has never stopped me before. So today, I am going to be talking about quantum physics, brain science, philosophy, creativity. I'm just going to throw it all in there. And though I probably don't need to make this disclaimer, I am not a scientist. I'm just a big fan of science. When I have time to read books for fun, I often turn to science. And I really like physics in particular. So I'm going to talk about some stuff that I've just read and my own speculations, and I'm not offering these ideas as if they are true. They could be true, but I think they're at least helpful as a metaphor, and they are true in that sense. So I will just say that the stuff I'm going to share here, I think it's at least helpful, and it is true to a certain extent, whether it's actual true in a scientifically verifiable way. Is that good? Is that a good enough disclaimer? All right, I take it by your silence. That's okay. So let's jump into this. Today, I want to start by talking about quantum physics. For the last few centuries, there's been a lot of questions concerning, is light a wave or a particle? And so scientists have been trying to figure this out. And so one of the most important experiments that came about to try to figure this out was the double slit experiment. And if you're unfamiliar with the double slit experiment, you can head over to YouTube, type in double slit experiment, and there are numerous videos that will explain it a lot better than I'm about to. It kind of helps to explain this with video. It's a little weird trying to share this in audio, but hopefully I can at least give you a snapshot of what this experiment is about. So basically, just imagine you were going to do this double slit experiment in your home. So all you would need is a shoebox, a flashlight that can shine with monochromatic light. You only need one aspect of the light spectrum, and some photosensitive paper, you know, like paper that you would print out pictures on. So you would need to get this working in a dark room at some phase, but basically you would take this shoebox, get an X-Acto blade, and put two slits in one of the horizontal sides of that box, And then on the inside, opposite wall from where the slits are, you would put this photosensitive paper, close the top of the box, and then shine a flashlight through those double slits. And, you know, you'd want to hold the flashlight a bit away from the box, but shine it. And for a few seconds, take that photosensitive paper, develop it, and what would emerge would be the obvious pattern of a wave. And so this is the result that was first confirmed when this experiment was done. And this experiment has been done countless times by scientists over the last few hundred years. So that solves it. Light is a wave. Well, not so quick. The interesting thing about this experiment is that as technology has increased, it has allowed us to look into the quantum world in a way that we wouldn't have been able to a couple hundred years ago. So if you did the same experiment, but instead of shining a flashlight, you actually had something that would allow you to fire one photon at a time or one atom at a time. You could do this with atoms or photons. The interesting thing is you would think that by firing single particles, that the pattern that would emerge on the back screen would be that which you would expect from particles, which would just be basically two columns where they go in through the slits and they would make these column patterns. But the interesting thing is that they discovered is that when you fire these atoms or photons one at a time, and you'd have to fire millions of them, that the pattern that actually emerges is not of particles, but of a wave again. It's as if these individual atoms intuitively know where to go in the wave. They're acting like a wave even when they are individual particles. Is light a wave or a particle? The answer is yes. What makes this experiment even more interesting, though, is if you take a detector and you put it above one of the slits, a detector that would allow you to know every time an atom goes through one of the slits, so you would be able to track about half the atoms going through. When you do that, then the results change. Instead of getting the pattern of a wave, you get the pattern that would emerge from particles. What is going on here? Well, we don't know yet. It seems that there is something that when we put a detector there, or possibly even conscious engagement and focus at something, it creates what's known as the observer effect, and it collapses the wave into something particular. And physics hasn't figured out why yet, but it's certainly an interesting phenomenon. So if you think of particle or wave, a wave is basically all the places a particle could be. A wave, you know, when light is traveling through those two slits, the individual photons of light can only go certain places. And it's, you could almost think of it like a bell curve. A bell curve would show you the possibilities of statistics plotted out on a graph, with the highest probability being the bell in the middle, you know, tapering off to the sides where it's lower probability. But everything in that would be the wave. Those are all the possible places something could happen. The wave is all the possible places that an atom or a photon could go. But something about observing it or measuring it collapses the wave into something particular. Now, I want to hold this as a bit of a metaphor, which I will unpack here in a minute, but I want to move over to the world of brain science now. Earlier on this year, I did a few episodes where I brought up a guy by the name of Ian McGilchrist. I had not read any of his books, but I'd watched some of his lectures and interviews, and I found that what he was saying was very interesting, and I finally got around to reading his book. Ian McGilchrist is a psychiatrist, philosopher, brain scientist over in the UK, and he wrote this book called The Master and His Emissary, subtitled The Divided Brain and the Making of the Western World. Now, in this book, McGilchrist it's a very long book, by the way. I'm doing the audiobook and I'm about halfway done. It's 27 hours long, I think. But in this book, he digs down into how we perceive the world through the right hemisphere of the brain or the left hemisphere of the brain. And really, you know, kind of the point he's making, or one of them, is that, you know, we've got a lot of misconceptions about right brain, left brain. And some of them are not so helpful. Some of them are flat out erroneous. But suffice it to say, like, one of the simplest ways of understanding things is that your right hemisphere of your brain is a way of seeing the world that is more big picture. You experience the world as it is coming to you, as it is unfolding to you. That's the right hemisphere of your brain. The left hemisphere of your brain is focused on particulars and representations. So you have your experiences that come to you through the right hemisphere of the brain. And over time, you make representations that you hold in the left hemisphere of your brain. So if you think about it, he uses the analogy of a bird going for a kernel of corn on the ground. The bird will engage the left hemisphere of its brain to discern that kernel of corn from any gravel or anything else on the ground and to pick it up and help it get the food. But the right hemisphere of that bird's brain helps the bird understand where it is, the context, the environment, and if there are any threats that, you know, some animal that may be waiting for it to go for that kernel so it can pounce on it. So these are two different ways of viewing the world, but he makes a very compelling case in this book that in the Western world, we have been so biased towards the left hemisphere that we have ended up, in spite of all of our technological progress, there's some huge unintended consequences that if they're not corrected, it's not going to bode well for humanity. In fact, McGilchrist really spends a great deal of time correcting some of the fallacies and the misconceptions about left and right hemispheres of the brain. You have likely, you know, probably thought that the right hemisphere was the servant of the left hemisphere. But he said that's really completely backwards, and there's plenty of brain science to show this, which I won't go into here, but you can check out his book. But basically, because the left hemisphere of your brain deals mainly with representations, you know, a representation just means to represent something. So it's not actual reality, it's more of a map of reality. Because the left hemisphere of your brain deals with representations and abstract ways of things, the left hemisphere of your brain is more about tools and objects and you know, particulars, which you need. But when that thing gets in control of the big picture, you got a problem. Because now you start confusing the map for reality itself. How many times do we see this today on social media? We have these maps of the world, the maps of our politics or our religion or, you know, all these maps that we construct that help us navigate life, but we're fighting over our maps and we're missing out on the actual reality, you know, which is the thing I've stressed many times on this podcast is that, you know, we can get so bent out of shape fighting over ideas that we actually miss engagement face-to-face, eye-to-eye contact with other human beings. And that's not a good thing for our world. It's not sustainable. In a sense, and this is where I will tie these two things together from quantum physics and brain science, in a sense, I think the right brain is more of the wave of possibilities. It is the big picture. It is the way of viewing the world in which, you know, the future's open. You know, the right brain is where you make connections, divergent thinking. It's where creativity comes from. It is where the seat of empathy. It is very relationally oriented. It understands things in terms of metaphors and relationships, whereas the left hemisphere is a collapsing of those things into something particular. And I think that if you think of right brain as the wave and left brain as the collapsing of the waveform, it's a very helpful analogy. and maybe there's some truth beyond it as a metaphor or analogy, but this is where I want to bring in the ideas of a guy named Peter Block. I read a fascinating book probably about 12 years ago called The Answer to How is Yes by Peter Block. What a cryptic title. Peter Block, I think I've maybe even mentioned his writing on this podcast before, but Peter Block is a consultant that works with businesses and, you know, government organizations, community organizations. And I'm not normally a type of person that is very drawn to business consulting books, but I really found this one quite interesting because he comes at it from quite a different angle than your typical business consulting books. He comes at it more from philosophy and creativity, which is probably why I liked it so much. But basically, Peter Block makes a very compelling case that when an organization or a business wants to start some new initiative or offer some new service or launch some new product, that oftentimes businesses make the mistake of asking the how questions way too early on. So there's something that you want to do, and then you're like, well, how can we do this? Wow, it's just going to take more money than we have. It's going to take more time than we have. And he makes the point that asking how questions too early on in the process is very detrimental to creativity, innovation. And if you can hold off on asking how questions and instead ask what and why questions and sit with those questions, you live in a much more open place. And so, to use my analogy again, you know, you stay in the wave of possibilities without collapsing it down to something particular. Because you see, how questions really have a way of limiting things. How questions confine things. You know, it's all about the constrictions. Like, how can this be possible? And Peter Block says, you know, don't rush to the how questions. Sit with the what questions. What is it that you want to do? And why do you even want to do it? Because if you sit with the what and the why questions and you really push into those, then you're going to start digging down into values. Because the best decisions are not decisions that are made purely for economic or pragmatic reasons. You know, there are plenty of decisions we make along those lines. But man, when it comes to big decisions, if you just make a big decision based on economics or pragmatics, you may end up succeeding with that decision, but succeeding in creating a world that you don't want to live in. You know, you may create something that is ultimately going to be your destruction. So sitting with the what and the why questions allow you to drill down into the values. What kind of world do you want to create? What is your unique gift that you have to offer to the world? What is it that you want to bring forth and why? And the interesting thing that Peter Block has mentioned here, and I've certainly noticed this in my life as well, is that if you push into the what and the why questions and you stick with them, even though you may not want to, you stick with them and start stepping into those, oftentimes you'll find that the how questions get answered along the way, but in ways that you could have never conceived of on the front side if you started asking those how questions. Because when you start asking the how questions on the front side, you were only dealing with your own representations of the world and how you can see things. And your perspective on reality is so finite. If you're going to create something that is going to be innovative or different or you know, special or unique or capture a unique gift that you have to offer the world, well, you can't collapse the wave too early on. Maybe another analogy that can kind of tie some of these things together would be, imagine that a friend of yours has invited you to a cocktail party. And there's going to be like 100 people there, but the only person you know is the friend of yours that invited you to the event. Now, unless you are an extreme extrovert, a lot of people would probably find the prospect of going to a cocktail party with 100 other people that they don't know a bit anxiety producing. it would get you on edge. And part of the reason it would get you on edge is you might reflect back on all the representations you have in your mind, going back to your own childhood of being at parties. Maybe you were at parties before, birthday parties when you were a kid, and you were left out and over in the corner by yourself, or maybe you got bullied by other kids. Maybe you're going to become self-conscious about your dress and your look, and your mind can go in all kinds of different directions, but. And that anxiety you would feel would be normal. But once you start moving into that anxiety and you start kind of collapsing the wave of possibilities, you land on what you think is probable based on the representations you hold in the left side of your brain from your past experiences that are not your present experience. They are representations. You're representing the world as it actually is, even though it's just a representation, a model, a map. As you start to land on what you think is the most probable outcome, then you actually start making decisions with your own actions that are likely to make that outcome more probable. Kind of like a self-fulfilling prophecy. The reality is, there is a wave of all kinds of possibilities that could happen at that cocktail party. You may show up at that cocktail party and make friends with somebody who's going to be one of your best friends for life. You may make a business contact that is going to be the key to opening up new avenues for revenue for you. You may just have a boring evening, drinking some wine, eating some cheese. It may be a bad thing. There's all kinds of possibilities for what could happen there. But as you lean into your representations and begin to collapse the possibilities, when you start asking those how questions and you start letting that stuff confine you, it collapses the possibilities into a very narrow range. And now you are actually acting in such a way as to bring maybe one of the more negative possibilities of that wave into being when you go to that cocktail party. See, I think it's best to stay in the wave of possibilities as long as you can. As long as you can. Yes, at some point you got to collapse the wave to do anything in life. But staying open to the possibilities allows you to be open for new enriching experiences and connections that if you would have collapsed them too early on, you would have missed out on. So I'll bring this into the world of songwriting for a minute. That's where it all comes back to for me. So I have had songs that I remember. There's a particular song that I tried to write 22 years ago. It was a really good idea for a song. I would share it with you, but I don't want you to steal the idea. But here, 22 years later, I still haven't finished that song. I got this idea in my head and then immediately picked up my guitar and then I attached that idea to some music and then I'm stuck. Even though I still think it's a great idea for a song, I wish I could share it with you. I wish I could trust you enough to share this idea with you. But I compare that to the way that I've been writing songs for my latest album, which I've been working on the past few months. I think I have actually some of my best songs that I've written are coming out on this album. I mean, I think they're good. I think they're some of my best songs. You might not. You might think they're crap. But the approach I've taken to songwriting on this current album is that instead of, sitting down with an idea of the song that I want to write, I've just been keeping a document open on my computer where a few times a week I'll write down a couple of lyrical ideas and then I'll move on. And I've got a lot of these ideas on voice memos on my phone. And I try not to force the issue too much. Just get a few ideas out there. I play my instrument a few times a week, sit down. I may get a few musical ideas and I'll record them. But really not trying to force the issue with anything. But the interesting thing is, in this approach, I've had several songs come to me. One of the most recent songs, which I think is actually going to be the title track of my new album, it's called No Beginning Quite Like an End. I wrote that song a few weeks back, and the song just it just came to me so quickly. Now, it really didn't come to me quickly. It just felt like it. The reality is, some of those little lyrical ideas that I'd written down in the previous weeks, I had enough of an idea that, you know, I'm walking into my house after getting groceries, and I remembered one of these lines I'd written down, and I got a melody, and I ran into my studio, and 10 minutes later, I had this song, which is a really good song, I think. I think it's some of my best lyrics, and the song just came together really quickly. It just felt like magic. And anyone who's a songwriter, it's like when you get those songs, man, it's just, it just seems like such a gift. It's just like, where did this thing come from? It just appeared. I think that's why the ancient Greeks talked about, you know, kind of being possessed by the muses when you write. That's what it feels like. It's like, man, where did this come from? But I think the approach there is something more of living in the wave of possibilities instead of, you know, being too confined by hows or collapsing the wave into trying to make this thing into what you want it to be on the front side. Staying in that wave, you're staying open to divergent thinking, open to melodies, open to ideas, which really, when you look at some of the greatest discoveries that have even happened in modern science, like Einstein's theory of relativity, for example, that did not come to Einstein in a university while he's just focused on trying to figure out this problem. He was daydreaming. You know, he was just letting his mind drift, and he began to think about light and a clock and, you know, and time travel and all this stuff. And then before he knows it, this whole theory emerges that transforms our understanding of physics. He wouldn't have got there if he'd have just kept focusing on the problem. He had to get out of his left brain confinement, the collapsing of all the possibilities into an open space. And in that open space, there was this gift waiting for him. Where am I going with all this? Well, I think as much as possible, we need to learn to pay attention in our lives to what is actually reality and what is our representation of it. And when it comes to our representation of reality, the things that we can't prove, whether it's religion, politics, you know, whatever it is that we just understand, like that's the map. It's not reality itself. The map is helpful. But so much of the problem in our world today is that we are fighting over our maps. And maps are very one-dimensional. You know, that a map is great for showing you specific things. But when you look at a map, you can only see what that map will show you. If it's a topographical map, it'll show you the elevations. If it's a map that shows you the breakdown of socioeconomics in your area, well, it'll show you that. But you need multiple maps to show you different slices of reality. We need to realize the difference between reality as we experience it versus our representations of reality that we hold in our minds, and to distinguish between those, and to try to, as much as possible, live in that place of possibilities, to live in that wave of all that could be, so that we can be open to the limitless surprises that can come our way, the gifts that will present themselves, the understanding that can come from not being so tied down and boxed in by representations, by how can you do this? I think that's a better place to be, certainly for creativity. I think it's a better place to be for spirituality. I think it's a better place to be for innovation. And I think even in our own relationships, because I find so often when things go sideways in my life, it is because I'm holding too tightly to a map, a representation of reality, than actually engaging reality itself. So there you have it. Quantum physics, brain science, philosophy, creativity, all in 30 minutes. Thanks for listening to Extra Crispy. And if you like what you hear, go over to iTunes. Give us some love. Give us a 5-star. Leave a review. And maybe forward this episode or other episodes on to some people that you think might enjoy them. All right. Well, we'll be back in another week or so with some of the amazing guests that we have lined up in the next few weeks. Thanks for listening. And keep riding that wave of the possibilities. All right.